back to the bottom of the parabolic cylinder at this point. Is that a more clear description of the surface HYS?
The only way you can focus energy is with a parabolic surface, and you're cutting away a major portion of the parabolic surface that does the focusing. Sounds to me like you're going to get very low efficiency, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, the idea is to get light, you know, through that spot, and yes, okay, the light that hits that, you know, it's a very wide spot, but if the light hits that spot directly, does not hit the reflectors, it's inside the barrel at that point. So I'm kind of counting that light as quote-unquote captured, even though it's not been focused. So as far as that goes, I'm not counting that as a loss of efficiency. Maybe that's a bad way of thinking of it. If I then take this object, which the surface which we've described, and instead of have it be linear, again, if we're pointing it such that it's, if you look at it vertically, and it's a parabola, and if you look at it horizontally, it's linear. If I take that linear part and then I sort of bend that around the surface of my barrel, you know, that's actually inside the barrel, not the outside of the barrel, it's immersed in the water, it should get that sunlight through the slot. And then if I paint the back side of those reflectors black, that should capture a lot of light. And I'm guessing that since the back side of those reflectors is going to have a lot more surface area, you know, even if you paint something black, there's still going to be some light that escapes off the surface of it, and having that larger interior surface area where the sunlight is hitting the black surface, maybe that would be more efficient and be better at heating the water in the barrel. So that's just a thought. I believe that people have used these barrels without any kind of internal reflectors, maybe just painting the outside of them black, or putting something inside of them that's painted black. And I'm wondering if this would be a better way to go about it. Anyway.
You can buy thermal heaters today that you put on the roof of your house, which are flat panels. Inside of the flat panels is a bunch of zigzagged black tubing that the sunlight shines on and heats the fluid in that tubing. Why is that? Why is your technique any higher in efficiency than that technique, Bill? And that's a much simpler technique. Over to you, K2RIW.
I'm not sure that it is more efficient than that. But what I'm comparing its efficiency to, I guess it would be an older technique, or if you have barrels lying around and you want to, fill them with water and use them to sort of average out the heat inside your home. You've got light coming through a big window. Thought experiment is, hey, do these reflectors do that job better by doing a better job of capturing light inside that barrel? Again, it's a thought experiment. It's not a practical project. ACJS.
Yeah, the flat panels that you can buy now, I think, are reasonably high in efficiency. They've got a track record. You're aiming light inside of I think you called it a transparent barrel, and you want the sunlight to be absorbed by the fluid in the barrel or be absorbed by the black surfaces of the barrel. Those flat panels do a beautiful job, and they don't have to be aimed. So I'm not convinced that your barrel technique is better, Bill, but we need a way to draw pictures to each other on a blackboard. What we're trying to do verbally here is missing the point. Mr. Blank, number 2 LU, I wonder if you had a question for us. Over to you, sir. KQRIW. And there was also another blank JYW, I think it was. I wonder if he's... Does anyone else within the sound of our voice have any further questions or discussions on any of the above? Give me a call, letters right now. KQRIW.
Is, do you like anal sex? The question is, do you like anal sex, Dick?
I think it's time we go over to the space report. So, Paul, what has NASA been doing over the last week or so? WS2N, K2RIW, and go right ahead with space report number 247, I think it is. You've got us, Paul.
Yes, that's right, 247, and it's WS2N for the SpaceNet report. Yeah, last Monday, spacecraft came back from the International Space Station. Yeah, Soyuz spacecraft brought back the Expedition 50 crew, which consisted of two Russians and Shane Kimbrough. And Shane Kimbrough is one of our American astronauts. So they wound up with a pinpoint landing. It was actually in the morning, wrote it down here somewhere, 6:40 in the morning. I got to see it on the NASA TV, and it was pinpoint, I mean, right on the money. Inside of 1 minute, they had the ATVs there and people getting out of the ATVs going over to the spacecraft that had landed in Kazakhstan. So that was pretty cool. You know, the space station's up 250 miles. They dropped them off inside of a couple of hours there on the ground. One big parachute. They have a reserve parachute if that don't open, but they didn't need that. So that brought the crew back to three on the International Space Station. Peggy Woods is up there with Tomas Piketty. He's from the European Space Agency and one Russian. So that was nice, very blue sky, nice to see. Good landing. And the craft rolled over onto its side, and then they had to roll back up and get the crew out of there. And they were all helping. And they spent, up to almost 6 months flying around on the space station. Now, Peggy Witz is left up there on the, up there with the two crewmates. And then she'll be joined by another flight going up on the 20th of this month to have two more people going up. One Russian and one American dropping. You have, now you're going to have a total of five people on board. So that's going to be a little different. It's usually six people. Temporarily, anyway, you're going to have five people on board. The American that's going to join them is Jack Fitcher. And he's a ham, KG5FYH. And the first time to go up to the space station for him. And they expect him to stay there for about 4 months, but the way things happen, he could be there longer. So it's interesting what happened. What's going to happen anyway? You have three. Peggy Witz is going to be left up there for an extra 4 months, 3 to 4 months. And she's actually going to come back with this crew that's going up there, Jack Fitcher and the commander of the Soyuz from Russia. So it's confusing, but temporarily anyway, there's going to be five people instead of six people. And eventually you're going to have, at one point you might just have, could have two people temporarily. If things work out the way I think they're going to work out, which would be very unusual. But we'll see what happens. Let me drop it. Now, this coming Tuesday, you have a launch from Cape Canaveral. of a cargo vehicle going up to the space station. And that will be, it's on NASA. And that'll be at 11 a.m. It could go up, you know, 10 or 15 minutes before or about 15 minutes after, but the ideal time is 11:11. And that will be on an Atlas V rocket, 401 configuration. That means it's got the 4-meter diameter fairing, which is encapsulating the Cygnus spacecraft. Cygnus spacecraft has about 7,500 pounds of stuff, science equipment, clothes, food, supplies for the space station. And, you know, they'll spend a couple days getting that spacecraft to the station, and when it gets within about 40 feet, a couple of days later, Peggy Whitson and Tomas Piszkat, European Space Agency astronaut, will grab the Cygnus with the 57-foot robotic arm and attach the cargo vehicle to the Earth-facing side. You know, they're going to attach it to Unity, one of the modules up there, and they'll be able to unload it, and they'll keep it there for a couple of, probably 2 or 3 months before that departs. I understand that the last Cygnus that went up there brought a new Emerson radio up, so that means they have their 2-meter capability back up and running in the Columbus module. There's really two ham radio stations on board the space station, one in the Columbus module and one in the Russian service module. And one in the Columbus module failed a couple of months ago, oh, I guess about 6 months ago or so, and they set up a new one. Since then, they've been just using the Russian ham radio for contact. Now we'll have both radios back in operation again, so that'll be good. Now, on another topic, just to change gears for a second, Blue Origin seems to be in the news a lot. Let me drop it. The Blue Origin is the company that's owned by Jeff Bezos. He's the owner of Amazon.com, one that's manufacturing the new Shepard spacecraft, which will eventually fly people. They'll probably have a test flight by the end of the year with a crew on board. But they plan on flying people on suborbital flights, so these 15-minute flights out in the desert down in Texas. But while he's doing this, he's been developing another rocket, building a new manufacturing facility in Florida, right near Cape Canaveral, and he's building the New Glenn. The New Glenn is a large rocket. It looks like it's about 2/3 the size of a Saturn V rocket, and that will be orbital, and also will be able to go to the moon if he chooses to, if he gets any contracts. He's looking to get contracts also from NASA to do that, just that. NASA's attention is now being refocused toward the moon. It's still focused on Mars, but they're thinking more about the moon lately. So he's developing, and he's been doing it for quite a while, but just releasing the information about another project that he's working on called Blue Moon. Blue Moon is going to be a lander that will actually land on the moon. So years from now, if NASA or anybody else, any other country or private rocket companies decide on actually putting equipment or eventually people on the moon, but it looks like equipment onto the moon, developing this lander. I haven't seen any technical details what it looks like. Only one site that I went to, which is not really good enough, but kind of described it. It will probably be a four-legged type of lander. We'll be able to bring supplies to the moon and back. but we'll see. That's Blue Origin. Now they'll have three different vehicles. They'll be working on the new Shepard, the new Glenn, which will be orbital, to carry, be able to carry people. And now the lander called Blue Moon. Every week, I would think, well, nothing new is going to come out, but sure enough, things keep coming out every single week. Let me drop it. And commercial spacecraft is really driving the news. Yeah, the SLS is still being built, that's the Space Launch System for NASA. But the possible launch dates keep slipping with that, and last I heard it was going to be beyond 2018 now before you could ever get a launch with the SLS system. And that's the large rocket that NASA's building that will eventually take people to Mars, even to the moon, back to the moon. We'll be able to take unmanned spacecraft such as the Clipper, the Europa Clipper, out to Jupiter, and closely investigate the moon Europa, also some of the other moons, but that's really the main purpose of that mission. SLS will be able to do that. But for more of the immediate future, and I'm talking about within a year or so, probably the end of 2018, you might see a commercial space-carrying company launch a couple of astronauts for a test ride on one of their vehicles. And that could either be by SpaceX with the Dragon crewed vehicle, which is being under development, or it could be by Boeing, which is developing the Starliner, also able to carry four people. Initial flights for both companies are go to the International Space Station. Their primary objective is to resupply people to the space station, like the Russians have been doing for decades now. We'll be able to do the same thing, except more. We'll be able to carry up four at a time if we want, and Russians can still only carry three. So I'm interested in seeing what happens. They're both companies, Blue Origin and SpaceX, are really concerned with driving the cost of flight down so there is a reusability. Both companies plan on reusing the booster. SpaceX has already successfully done that. In fact, they've just relaunched one of those boosters. Their next objective is to save these fairings, these 4-meter and 5-meter fairings that are attached to the top of every rocket, which separate and expose the spacecraft to space. They're very expensive. SpaceX, they say the price is about $6 million, and they could save that. So on the last flight, they did test trying to save even the fairings. They tried bringing both of them down. They successfully recovered one half. So they're on the way to doing something like that. They have their own thrusters. When they're in outer space, they can maneuver. And when they start coming through the atmosphere, they have parachutes. And his goal is to make most of the rocket, if not all of it, reusable. He is now planning, he just made an announcement, to go back 5, 6, 10 years, I don't know, many years ago when he first started talking about reusability, and he's planning on reusing the second stage. He's now back on that kick again, and he's going to start developing a way to try to save that second stage when we drop it. As it is now with all launches, when we launch an Atlas rocket or a Delta 4 or even a Delta 4 Heavy, whatever rocket we launch, including Ariane space, that last booster, the second booster, second stage, after separating from its payload, has thrusters on board. It reorients itself in space, and it does another burn. And the purpose of the burn is to deorbit that piece, so you do not have another big piece of space junk for every flight that goes up, and it's hundreds of flights every year, a little over 100 a year. And that winds up landing in an ocean, either the Pacific or the Indian Ocean, depending on the trajectory of the flight. So SpaceX is, they know they're doing it anyway. Let's find a way to put a heat shield on it, bring it back through the atmosphere, maybe use a parachute or something. But they're thinking about eventually trying to reuse that second stage. Long-term plans, if they could have enough fuel on board, would be actually to have a propulsive landing on land with the second stage. That would be the ultimate goal. Might take 5-10 years from now, I think, but I mean, he does say different things that he's going to be doing, and he's always very optimistic. It's always a year away or a year and a half away, and find out sometimes that date tends to float to a different year or different 5 years out or something. But a lot of it does come to pass. So that's pretty much it for the space report, Dick. If you want to pick it up or anybody else, I'll be here. Not going anywhere for now. Back to you, Dick, and happy Easter to everybody. And B2RIWWS2N for the space portion of the of the time net.
I've got a couple of questions for you, Bill. Paul. But before I ask those questions, let's find out if anyone else have any questions or comments with reference to the space report. Give me a call that is right now if you do. K2RIW the TechNet. You mentioned the, I guess it's Jeff Bezos' set of vehicles, if I understand correctly, Blue Origin, New Shepard, Blue Moon Lander. It sounds like if you combine that with the so-called Google Prize, where you have to put a unmanned vehicle on the moon, move them a certain distance, take some pictures in order to win a prize, all of this would lead you to believe that we're thinking of putting men back on moon, not just vehicles. And here I'm becoming skeptical, Paul, and maybe you're going to give me other information that'll change my skepticalness. In the case of the Apollo program, let me drop it. One of the main motivations of the Apollo program is the fact that we were in competition with the then Soviet Union as to who had the best launch vehicles and the best ICBMs and who could get to this goal first and so on. So we had a definite competition. And therefore we put, I guess it was Apollo 11, 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, a total of six vehicles, 12 human beings we placed on the moon from roughly 1969 to, I guess, around 1971, almost 1972. So in that three-year period of time, we put six men on the moon. They did a lot of research. They collected a lot of rocks. We learned a lot about what lunar soil is like. But we very carefully aimed them at a point on the moon that was, I think, at near sunrise. I think each one of the landings was near sunrise. Let me drop this. Because you don't want them there on the moon at high noon when it's over 150 degrees centigrade, way beyond boiling water. And you don't want them on the moon at midnight on the moon on a 28-day period where you're minus 150 degrees centigrade. It frees the daylight out of them. So, to put men on the moon as a colony or a research crew and leave them there for more than, let's say, 2 or 3 days represents a huge problem of thermal management, cold and hot. So the only way you can put a colony on the moon is to either put them in a habitat that is I'm going to pick a number 60 meters below the surface where the temperature is more constant. Or maybe there's a way you can put them at a crater at the north pole or the south pole of the moon, where although it's cold, at least the temperature is more steady. So because of that degree of difficulty, let me drop. Being coming up with hardware that can maintain human life in that thermal environment is a very serious engineering challenge. And if the moon contains gold, platinum, uranium, anything you can think of that's valuable, and you think you're going to do a mining operation there, when you look at the cost of getting your spaceship to the moon and back, no matter how valuable that material is, I don't think mining the moon can be profitable. So, in the next 20 years, is my question, Paul, other than a whole lot of optimistic-sounding plans and hardware being built, that has the capability of going to and landing on the moon and bringing men to the moon. Let me drop it. I'm having great difficulty in believing that a future president of the United States is going to want to fund colonizing of the moon, putting men on the moon in a semi-permanent manner. Because the first question you're going to ask is, yes, it's very expensive. What do I get in return? If it's only research you're doing, it's 1,000 times cheaper and safer to send an unmanned vehicle to do your research. To put a man on the moon and to have him survive that environment for any significant length of time beyond 2 or 3 days is a huge challenge, highly life-threatening. And what do you get in return? So as you can see, I'm giving you a pessimistic-sounding scenario. Do you know of other information that would make lunar colonization sound more desirable? What do you get in return? WS2N, K2RIW, go ahead, Paul.
All right, right now NASA is thinking about, they call it a gateway, gateway station, but they're not committing or even saying they're thinking about landing people on the moon. They would like to put a space station near the moon, and not necessarily orbiting the moon, but going out to a halo orbit about 40,000 miles beyond the moon. You know, the moon is about 230 some odd thousand miles from us. Well, add another 40,000 miles, and that's where the space, let's call it the space station, but they're calling it a gateway station, would be located. And the idea of this is to test, really to verify the equipment that they plan on really eventually sending to Mars. So Lockheed Martin is developing habitat systems, orbital ATK is, and I guess eventually they'll try to choose something which will be placed the lunar, they call it cislunar, CIS lunar location. And by doing something like this and using the SLS to do it, because some of these modules would be very heavy, 30,000 pounds or more. They need a heavy lift vehicle like the SLS. They'll be able to use the SLS because it's a they need to test that thing out itself. They need to test these habitat vehicles that they plan on using to go to Mars. So they're going to use it as a shakedown type of location. Spend a year or more in these locations without being constantly resupplied by Earth. That type of thing. Would you be able to have enough power? They plan on 40 kilowatt solar panels. That would be the first thing that goes out there. 40 kilowatt solar panels, really like a machine room. So this module would go out there and then wait for another habitat module to be sent out by another SLS to launch. That gets sent out there, you get docked with the with that one, and eventually maybe another module. After that, another launch carrying two people. They can carry up to four, but you know, probably in the beginning two, and they'll stay at that station in this kind of like lunar orbit for, I think they said, 30 days in the beginning to see how that goes, and then work your way up, you know, another mission for 60 days, another one for 200 days, and a couple of, another year, as the years go by, you know, they plan on keeping a crew there for a year to see how they do. Now, it gets a little fuzzy after that. You know, are you going to utilize the same equipment and then launch that equipment off to Mars, like some people want to do, or have brand new equipment going up there? The ones that are in orbit around the moon will be tried and true. Maybe that will be better. Let's send those pieces to Mars, you know, or they're going to build new ones. These are the theories they're building around it. Now, Blue Origin knows what, you know, once you have a space station in the vicinity of the moon, they'll be able to monitor what goes on the surface. And maybe there's private companies that want to try mining, see how it goes, see what they can get out of it, see how profitable it is. Who knows? But they'll be able to control that equipment real time without the second, a little over a second delay that you would normally get. Well, actually, probably almost 2 seconds delay from Earth. It would be like real time from a, almost real time from a space station operating equipment from that location. Let me drop it. As far as manned landings, yes, there's people that are interested in that. Right now, NASA has not committed to anything like that yet. But maybe, you know, Blue Origin will, or maybe, India, I know, is looking to eventually launch people to the moon. China definitely is, which is, you know, they will, at that time, will they be a partner of the United States? I don't think so, but, you know, there's a possibility that, you know, that there could be things on moon, on, you know, either robotic or that have to be brought down to the moon's surface, or eventually people, you know, maybe spend short periods of time there. Well, Blue Origin is, you know, starting to design this spacecraft called Blue Moon that would have that capability. This is what they're at, you know, up to right now. So as far as predicting dates and time and money, and who's committed to what, you know, that's still a long way off. I'm trying to give you an idea where it's going. Things have changed a little bit with the new administration. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, I've got some words, I guess, about the so-called halo orbit. Mr. Lagrange worked on the mathematics of various kinds of orbits that you can set up between two major celestial bodies. If the two bodies you're talking about are Sun and Earth, then Lagrange point number one is roughly 1 million miles from the Earth toward the Sun. That's where our SOHO satellites and similar satellites are located. That's Lagrange number one. Lagrange number two between Earth and Sun is 1 million miles behind the Earth, and that's where the infrared telescope is going to go. I keep forgetting the name of the damn thing.
James Webb.
So James Webb is going to be 1 million miles behind Earth at Lagrange point number two. There's another Lagrange point 93 million miles behind the Sun, Lagrange point number three, that we don't intend to use. And there's a Lagrange point number four and five, which are roughly a triangular pattern between Earth and Moon, and those little Lagrange points are ahead of the Earth's orbit, behind the Earth's orbit, at roughly the Earth's orbit radius. So Earth and Sun make you some Lagrange points. If you now consider just Moon and Earth, you've got another set of Lagrange points. The first Lagrange point, number one, is roughly 40,000 miles from the Sun, or roughly 200,000 miles from the Earth. A second Lagrange point number two between Earth and Moon is 40,000 miles behind the Moon, away from the Moon. And there's a number three and a number four. But so the so-called halo orbit, I think, is really Lagrange point number one between Earth and Moon. I wonder if they've ever used those words.
Repeater, timeout.
I wonder if they've ever used those particular words. So let's talk about that first. WS2N, K2RIW.
I've read it in more detailed technical articles that they actually use the word Lagrange when they refer to that. But yeah, this would be Earth, Moon, spacecraft. They're thinking about the equivalent of, L2, not the L1. L2, beyond that lunar orbit. And with that halo orbit out there, they'll be able to transmit to Earth 100% of the time, because the way they'll set it up where the Moon is actually not in the way. You know, it's not like a permanent eclipse. So that's their goal. And yes, it is definitely the Lagrange point. But you won't see that in a lot of the articles. Maybe eventually we'll start to see that, but they don't use that. They just say, they call it a 40,000 mile orbit, you know. That's close enough for most of the stories that they write, you know. So don't forget, I'm getting these from a lot of websites, and I tend to aggregate, you know, two or three. I try to get at least three websites, reputable ones, together before I say anything on the air about what they're trying to do, and that could all be wrong as well. So, by the way, Popular Science had a great there. They have a special edition this month. It's not even a month, it's a monthly edition. It's all space from cover to cover. Not one, I couldn't find one advertisement or the whole thing. Back to you, Dick.
So the halo orbit you're talking about between Earth and Moon, they're going to use not Lagrange point number one, but Lagrange point number two, the backside of the Moon as far as the Earth is concerned. And so I'm having some trouble believing that you're not going to run into lunar blockage as far as the signal from this is concerned. And yes, you can put astronauts and equipment there as a kind of a space station at this halo orbit. And that halo orbit is always going to be on the far side of the Moon as far as an Earth observer is concerned, if you choose lunar Lagrange point number two. I'm wondering why they go there instead of lunar Lagrange point number one. Number one is closer to home, easier to get to, no radio blockage. I wonder why they didn't choose Lagrange point number one. And so this is going to be a shakedown cruise for the hardware that goes to Mars. And there's not going to be any drop-down missions from this halo orbit down to the lunar surface. Bill and Nepal, WS2N, K2RIW.
If they get this far, I'm going to say, yes, the years go on. I'm going to predict that they probably will do that. But no, that's not in any of the articles. But what you do see is other companies, you know, that's Moon Express and things like that, they're interested in actually mining the Moon and things. If they ever got big enough where they could do this type of thing, actually mine the Moon, they would need help, and NASA would get involved with that, you know, I'm sure from their location. And they do say they'll be able to move this if they want to slowly orbit the Moon. I guess they could, they're planning on, you know, being having a capability to actually change the orbit, as years go on. This is roughly what they're talking about doing now. So, you asked me something else, I'm trying to imagine what it was. Well, yeah, why don't they use the other one? It's something to do with it's not as stable. Orbit is not as stable because of the sun, and, you know, it affects that orbit too much. It's stable, but it's not as stable as you would think. The other, L2 is better. L4 and L5 is very good. In fact, there's something, I think it's called the L5 Society group that would love to put a colony, I mean, you know, thousands and thousands of people in a colony, that the L5 colony could bring up the L...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
They've been around for decades, and they would like to be in that particular launch point. Back to you, sir.
When you're on Earth Moon Lagrange Point number 2, from an earthbound observer, you're on the back side of the moon. I can't see any way to juggle that orbit where you're still at for Lagrange Point number 2, and the moon doesn't give you one hell of a blockage for your radio signal back to Earth. Did they make that clear as to how they avoid that problem, Paul? WF2N, K2LAW?
I know the diameter of this halo is supposed to be quite large, so you're always pretty much able to part of the Earth. And for the times that you can, there's definitely going to be communication satellites in lunar orbit, so they'll be able to bounce off of those particular satellites. That'll become like their Tedris. Back.
Okay. Yes, I do remember now there is a fairly large halo, which at least part of the time the Earth's going to be a blockage. What's wrong with Lagrange Point number 1, the point that's 40,000 miles away from the moon, in front of the moon toward the Earth? What's wrong with that point? I guess you said it's not as stable. And Lagrange Point number 4 and 5 are very stable. Maybe they're the ones that are really going to be used, Paul. 4 and 5 are, I think, unconditionally stable, whereas 1 and 2 are only conditionally stable. 4 and 5, I think, are unconditionally stable. But this space hardware, it sounds like it's primarily a shakedown cruise for something bigger, like Mars. But if Mars is not going to be a reality for some very large number of years, decades, is that going to be enough to finance this? Now, maybe Musk and Bezos have got so much money that they don't need government funding, and they're just going to go and do it with their funds. I'm pretty sure that, I can't think of his name, the guy who's the president of Microsoft, he's got enough money to finance this, if he wanted to spend his money that way. So, are these missions going to be privately funded, Paul, WS2N, K2RAW?
The ones I'm talking about are NASA plans, you know. Maybe with the help of European Space Agency. So that's what we're talking about now. And as far as private funding, well, Elon Musk is pretty much funding everything. I understand Google has put some money into it, maybe somebody else, but you know, he's probably picking up the major share of what goes on with SpaceX. Don't forget, he's got Tesla on the stock market, I believe, and he's got SolarCity. I don't know if that's on the solar. That might be on the stock market too. But SpaceX isn't, so it's all private. He makes all the decisions of what to do, what not to do. So he's up to all these different missions. He's up to 10 flights to the space station. Probably, let's see, 10, 15, 18. Privately funded flights to, you know, for all these different satellites that he's put into geosynchronous orbit, you know, not for our country, but Thailand and India and, you know, Brazil and Mexico and Indonesia. He's put all these satellites up there. So that's all privately funded. And Jeff Bezos, he's actually richer than Musk for SpaceX. He's able to privately fund all the projects he's got going. He's got the New Shepard being built and flown in West Texas. Eventually going to have paying people go on that, up to 6 people at a time. That should be coming up within a year and a half. That's the latest prediction. Well, you'll still probably see a test flight at the end of the year with maybe two crewmen on board, two astronauts on board testing it out. And then he's got this massive building he's building down in Expedition Park in Florida, right near Cape Canaveral. And he's going to roll out these new Glenn rockets, which is probably about two-thirds the size of Saturn V. And that first shot, well, they predicted early on probably 2019. I'm going to go with 2020 with the new Glenn for its first flight. We drop it. And now he's planning on funding this lunar lander. So we'll see what happens to that with Blue Moon. He's got a big bill he has to pay. So every year now, they said what he does, he takes $1 billion worth of his stock and sells it. You know, he's got Amazon.com. He just sells $1 billion and takes that and keeps funding Blue Origin. He's hiring people. He's got, I don't know how many, couple hundred people he's now he's hired down in Florida. So he's getting a little bit bigger every time you turn around. So they're the two main players. Boeing and Lockheed, of course, really big time with the Atlas V rocket and their manned spacecraft called Starliner. And that should probably launch within a year and a half. A test flight up to the space station. That should be interesting. Starliner will be launched on an Atlas V rocket. Let me try this. Atlas V rocket from Florida, encapsulated in a 4-meter diameter bearing. It'll get launched up to the space station. It'll be able to carry up to 12,000 pounds of stuff, much more than all these other spacecraft. And it's got wings that will open up when it's up there. So this way, when it comes back, it'll be able to land on a runway that's called Dream Chaser. Dream Chaser. And that's probably, they said their original flight was going to be 2019, but you know how things go. I wouldn't be surprised if that's 2020 as well. And now that's from the Sierra Nevada Corporation, SNC. Now that's not like one guy in charge of that, you know, paying for all that. He's probably, SNC, my guess is probably on the stock market. I'd have to check. But the only two that I know that don't have to answer to anybody is SpaceX, Elon Musk, and Jeff Bezos from Amazon, from Blue Origin. Back to you, Dick. This is
right now, when it comes to men in space, the International Space Station certainly is a major installation. Lots of people up there, so to speak, and a lot of experiments going on. What is the current thinking, Paul, as to how long International Space Station is going to exist? Have we committed it to the year 2022, 2024? Where is our commitment on that one? And no matter where it is, because of how big that investment is, you've got a gut feel it's going to be extended. So, do we have enough experiments to do for the next 10 years at least on the International Space Station, do you think? WS2N, K2RIW?
At any time, there's about 400 experiments going at one time. But out of the 21 partners, you know, us, the Russians, and Japan, and then the European Space Agency, you know, they're all different entities. They're all involved with this this project. And they, you know, right now they're committed to, well, they're committed to 2024. That's everybody jumped on board finally toward the end there when time was running out. We were right up there, and then Japan jumped on right away, and then finally the Russians, and then the last, believe it or not, was the European Space Agency. So they were all committed to 2024. That was about a year and a half ago. Now the time is coming up again, and already you have 2028 by us and the Russians. The Russians said they would do not want to give this thing up, where I thought they were going to start to back off. So 2028 looks like the, you know, I'm sure the European Space Agency in Japan will come on afterwards. I think Japan might have come on already. I'm not sure. But it looks like 2028 to me is
They've already shifted it another 4 years, so that's good news. Now, that's good for all these other private companies, too. Let me drop it. Sierra Nevada Corporation with Dream Chaser supplying the space station. The Dragon new crew vehicle, that they're building to send crews up there. They also have a new cargo vehicle they're building to keep supplying the space station, and that's all SpaceX, so they'll be actually sending two different vehicles up at the same time. And that new cargo vehicle is being built with propulsive engines, they call them Super Draco engines, which after leaving the space station, instead of coming down in a parachute like they do now and land in the Pacific Ocean, and they're picked up by one of their own SpaceX ships and then brought back to dry land, and then the scientists get a hold of all their equipment and everything that's in the freezers and everything right away. Instead of doing that, they plan on coming back to land on propulsive landing, come back down, and they land wherever they want to land, and now the scientists instantaneously have all their equipment back, and they're going to love that. So that's SpaceX. And then you've got Boeing, which is building the Starliner. Starliner will be bringing a crew of four up to the space station on a regular basis. So, now the East Coast company for Rainier Russ is Orbital ATK, and they continue. They're going to be doing this, Tuesday? Not from Virginia. They could launch from either Virginia or Florida. This time they're launching from Florida. But they launched the Cygnus spacecraft, and they'll be able to, now they all have contracts, these multi-billion-dollar contracts, and now they're starting getting toward the end of those. They've already got new multi-billion-dollar contracts to last, until 2024 almost. And now what's going to happen after that, they're going to need more contracts that are going to have to be given out for these same companies, because they'll have to continue sending flights up, manned and unmanned flights to the space station. So, and that doesn't even count with, there's other things that fly up there. Let me drop it. You have the HTV vehicle being launched usually once a year by Japan. That comes out of it launches from the Japanese Takashima launch facility in Japan. And then you also have the Russians, of course, are launching people all the time, and they're constantly launching their Progress ships up to the space station on a regular basis. Probably around four Progress ships a year. And that will continue on now year after year all the way now to probably 2028. Definitely to 2024, but it looks like 2028 now. Back to you, Dick.
That's amazing. So I'm hearing lots of sounds of funding and enthusiasm and future for the International Space Station. Okay. The Halo orbit on Lagrange point number 2, 4, or 5. How solid is the commitment for that one, Paul? Are we talking about 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Who's going to fund it? And does it have any clearly stated purpose other than a shakedown cruise for the deeper space hardware? How about you on that one, Paul? K2RIW.
They've been pushing this idea around, I would say, probably for 5 to 6 years, but now since the new administration got in there, I think they're starting to look at the moon a little bit more, these shakedown cruises, instead of going out to Mars. But then, they're trying to change things. The new administrator, he's a temporary NASA administrator, administration in Washington as running it. His name is Robert Lightfoot. Seems to be pretty good, but he's temporary. Seems to be organizing this, and it's since since they've kind of like taken over. They've switched their plans to this idea of going back to the moon a little bit. Not completely committed to moon landing yet, but they apparently like this idea that was on the drawing board for many years, you know, no money put into it. So I think they're starting to develop it. If you see anything like this, let's see, the first space launch system would launch, well, it was 2018. Now that's, I see that's already back to 2019. By the time you see a lunar piece put into orbit, probably the earliest would be 2020, 2021. It's a long way off. Things that you read about. I mean, space launch system is still in the full development, as well as the Orion spacecraft. You know, I read about stuff like this every day. That, you know, they're making progress in building it, building both pieces, as well as the European Space Agency contributing the service module to the system. That's on the development and coming along too. But they had plans of testing it without people in 2018. Now, Trump administration got in, they're saying, no, we don't want to launch this multi-billion-dollar thing all by itself. They plan on sending the spacecraft unmanned all the way to the moon, right? And then going out to the L2 position for a little while and then bringing it back and landing it back on Earth. How everything worked out, how the equipment shaked out. But now, what they want to do is, let's put people on the first launch of this thing. Let me drop it. You know, their theory is, well, we did it with the space shuttle. When we first launched Columbia, we put Bob Crippen and John Young on board. Shot them up there for four orbits and brought them back, and everything was fine. You know, that space shuttle never flew by itself. So I don't know. That's the way it's going. To do what they want to do, it's going to take more time. They're changing plans midstream. First it was going to be unmanned, then it was going to be manned. Then they were going to change the second stage, and that was also going to be manned. But, I don't know. They're changing things around little by little. So time will tell. Anything I'm saying now, since November, is kind of not written in stone. Back to you, Dick. WS2N.
I think you're suggesting that Robert Lightfoot has been the temporary NASA administrator since November. But you're going to correct me on that. Where do we stand with Hubble? I'm pretty sure there are no more. I know there's not going to be any more shuttle missions to Hubble. There's no shuttle. And of all the spacecraft that Musk and Bezos and others are building, I'm not hearing the sound of any of them being easily adapted to go to Hubble spacecraft. The Hubble is going to need some servicing pretty soon, I think. I haven't heard any sounds of a robot ship being constructed that can go and do the service at Hubble. So if Hubble had major failure of its inertial wheels tomorrow, does that mean because of the James Webb about to go that we're just going to ignore Hubble and let James Webb do it all, and we'll abandon Hubble? So from what you know right now, what is the predicted fate of Hubble for the next 5 or 10 years, so to speak? WS2N, K2RIW.
They think with the batteries and everything, the gyros, the way everything's working, they think they can get to 2019, which would be good. It would be the beginning of the functioning James Webb Space Telescope. And then they have their fingers crossed for anything beyond that. But yeah, if the reaction wheels fail and things start tumbling, There's no way in the world they can say that you can't approach a vehicle like that when it's in that kind of situation. You know, it's going to have to be served.